Me, saying the unsayable, letting the id entirely off the lead as we try not to, give us a holiday from our own scruples. But they also remind us why we have those scruples. They hold the mirror up to nature for us. They give us the thrill of danger in the safe place that's the theatre. From fairy tales to the Christmas story to mythologized history, they allow us a world in which evil does not prosper, while allowing us a taste of sheer good fun. The TV series has somewhat changed all that, of course, because you may have to wait for a very long time to be sure of a good moral ending. Nigel Havers, a bit of a cad in Coronation Street, rather surprised himself when he pushed it all very much further in a series called The Charmer.
I didn't really take into account how villainous this man was until I started making it. And I had a wonderful director who just made me go for it, you know, the full-on, you know, seduction. He ended up killing women, which is, you know. And then I then finished filming and he showed it to me. And I thought, God, you know, I'll never work again. I really did believe that it was the worst decision I'd ever made because this man was so villainous. So I was terrified. Anyway, it came out and was a huge success and they wanted more. They wanted me to do it again. I said, well, he's dead. No, we can deal with that, they said. The demand for it was so great.
Nigel Havers, who plays dangerous characters with great charm and relish. Anything But Banal, The Fascination of the Villain, was presented by Paul Allen and produced by Julian May. Well, in next week's Sunday feature, the poet Paul Farley travels down France's sleepiest river, whose character belies its violent history, the Somme. That's next Sunday evening at the same time, 6:45.
Radio 3's Here and Now pays tribute to the late John Taverner with a concert of some of the last music he composed. The BBC Philharmonic is joined by Jonathan Lemalu and celebrated Taverner collaborator Stephen Isserlis, and we'll be hearing from fellow composer Judith Weir, as well as some archive interviews with Taverner himself.
When I first became conscious in Switzerland after I'd been ill, everything seemed to have vanished. I couldn't feel the God that I used to feel, and the way it came back, it came back in a different form. And it's much more now a question of knowing somehow where there is nothing, there is God. I think that's a Hindu saying.
Here and Now, this Saturday night at 10:05 on BBC Radio 3.
This Sunday night on BBC Radio 3, Drama on 3 pays tribute to the late Gerard Murphy. You can hear his performance as Herman Melville in These Buttons We Wear, a retelling of the Billy Budd story. That's Drama on 3 tonight at 10 o'clock. BBC Radio 3, now 28 minutes to 8, and time for another highlight from the summer's proms season. Here's Susie Klein.
Tonight at the proms, we bring the spotlight onto two leading lights in Radio 3's new generation artists. That's the BBC scheme, which nurtures exceptional musical talent wherever it finds it across the globe. With us this evening, here at the Royal Albert Hall, we've two of the current crop of NGAs, a pair of British singers, the mezzo Jennifer Johnston. We'll hear her in music by Vaughan Williams this evening. And we're also joined by the soprano Ruby Hughes, who opens tonight as the soloist in Henrik Goretzky's Third Symphony, his Symphony of Sorrowful Songs. We caught up with tonight's conductor, Osmo Vanska, earlier and started by asking him what the challenges are for Ruby Hughes tonight and why the soprano soloist is so key to the emotional impact of Goretzky's symphony.
I would say that the soprano is such kind of voice from another dimension, maybe a voice from heaven, or at least the soprano is sometimes asking questions which should go to heaven. For me, it's something like one would like to be alone, maybe a crowded place like a church, but still alone, and thinking, maybe praying, thinking all those kind of sad, deep things when we are missing someone. And in this case, we know the text is speaking about this boy who died, and how mom is like, why did it happen, and where are you? And I think we all have those situations in our lives, to be like or not, but that's a reality. And Goretzky's Third would give a chance for us to think about something which has happened long time ago or just recently, and giving us a place where we can be with our thoughts.
Osmo Vanska, tonight's conductor, on Gretzky's Third, his Symphony of Sorrowful Songs. Also on the bill from Vanska and the BBC Symphony Orchestra this evening with Vaughan Williams' Four Last Songs, newly orchestrated by Anthony Payne, and Tchaikovsky's searing masterpiece, his Sixth Symphony, or Pathétique as it's known. Osmo Vanska, opening tonight's prom though with Gretzky, his profound meditation on love and loss, the Symphony of Sorrowful Songs, and applause for tonight's leader of the orchestra, Daniel Rowland, coming on stage to join the other players of the BBC Symphony Orchestra here at the Royal Albert Hall. And here comes soloist Ruby Hughes and tonight's conductor, Osmo Vanska, on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall for a performance of Gretzky's Symphony No. 3, his Symphony of Sorrowful Songs.
Paris.
Gorecki's Symphony No. 3, his Symphony of Sorrowful Songs, performed live here at the Proms by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, conductor Osmo Vanska, and the soprano Ruby Hughes making her Royal Albert Hall debut here at the Proms. Here tonight, and impossible to believe from that reception that this piece wasn't always a success. Written in 1976, but it wasn't until a recording was made in 1992 that Gorecki was turned into an international sensation. That music, three movements, each of them setting a text of profound love and loss. In every setting, a mother who's lost her child. We go from the 15th century, Mary singing a lament for Jesus, an 18-year-old daughter in a Gestapo prison, the Silesian uprising in Poland. And I was talking to Ruby Hughes earlier today, who said that given every time we turn on the news at the moment, there are these terrible pictures of children in crisis around the world. It's almost unbearably moving for her to sing that music. And here she comes back on stage. Wonderful debut for her. still to come tonight with Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, the Pathétique. And before that, the four last songs. No, not the ones by Richard Strauss, but by Ralph Vaughan Williams. They'll be performed this evening by Radio 3 new generation artist, the mezzo Jennifer Johnston, in tonight's celebration of the NGAs, that pioneering BBC scheme to support young musical talent. Well, just a couple of days ago, the latest new gens, as they're known, were announced. Six young musicians or groups will spend the next 2 years in the scheme. So we thought we'd catch up with tonight's performers, Jennifer Johnston and Ruby Hughes, to see what being new generation artists has meant to them. We found them rehearsing at the BBC's Maida Vale studios.
So, Jennifer, we've reached the final stages of NGA. How do you feel?
I can't quite believe it, truthfully. 2 years has flown by in a blink of an eye, and I can't believe how much we've managed to get through and also achieve, actually, in that period.
So what's been your favourite project?
I have to say, working with the orchestras has been absolutely amazing. How brilliant to be given an orchestra for an afternoon and be able to record anything we choose. Each of them so different as well. It's been an incredible experience to feel like you can grow as a person and as well as an artist, but also to be able to use repertoire that you wouldn't necessarily always get to do in a concert, pick stuff that isn't necessarily mainstream.
It's been brilliant. Absolutely loved it.
Have you found working on lots of different kinds of song repertoire a challenge?
Yeah, it's been really exciting, really challenging as well, having to record 45 minutes of music over 6 hours. I found it knackering.
It is pretty tiring, but also it challenges you vocally in ways that you don't expect, and that also is a good thing, I think, in terms of our future development.
There you have it. It is definitively knackering being part of this scheme. The soprano Ruby Hughes and mezzo Jennifer Johnston, who is about to sing live here at the Royal Albert Hall as part of tonight's prom. Jennifer is the soloist in a BBC commission which finds contemporary British composer Anthony Payne orchestrating four songs by Ralph Vaughan Williams dating from the composer's last year. Two of them are on Greek mythological subjects and two celebrate marital love. Earlier, we asked Anthony Payne how he came to orchestrate the songs and when he first discovered them.
Well, quite recently, I'm ashamed to say, because I pride myself on my love and knowledge of nearly all of Vaughan Williams' output. I know all the symphonies intimately. I know a great deal of Vaughan Williams, but I did not know the four last songs. Of course, they weren't meant to go together. Michael Kennedy, Vaughan Williams' expert, said that he thought there were two embryonic cycles included in there. Two of the songs belong to one cycle, that's the first and the last, and the other two to a rather different cycle. And they only discovered the four after Vaughan Williams had died, and their publishers said that it would be a good idea just to issue them as a group, but they weren't meant initially to be a group. It sounds rather like a marriage of convenience, but actually they do make sense together. The first and the last are in his late style, post Sinfonia Antarctica style. And the two in the middle are more like his earlier style, like Songs of Travel style. And it's a sort of compendium of Vaughan Williams's vocal manner, actually. I think it's rather touching. It sums him up. And, of course, they're all by Ursula Vaughan Williams, his wife. And there's a feeling that a couple of the songs are like love songs written by Ralph for Ursula. And that's very touching.
Anthony Payne, whose new orchestration of Vaughan Williams' four last songs, a BBC commission, is just about to get its world premiere here at the Proms. And applause for tonight's soloist, the mezzo Jennifer Johnston, followed on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall by conductor Osmo Wenska, joining the players of the BBC Symphony Orchestra.
Is lying Thank you.
the world premiere of Anthony Payne's orchestration of the four last songs of Ralph Vaughan Williams, a BBC commission performed here at the Proms by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, led tonight by Daniel Rowland, conducted by Osmo Vanska. The soloist, Jennifer Johnston, and a very sprightly Anthony Payne now galloping down from G Stalls to join everyone on stage here at the Royal Albert Hall. Warm hugs and thanks between Anthony Payne and Jennifer Johnston, Osmo Vanska. Anthony Payne is such a brilliant composer in his own right, catalogue of 50 or so works in every genre bar opera, but I think also such a great ear for getting inside other composers' minds and sound worlds. He famously elaborated the sketches for Elgar's Third Symphony, and he has spent so many years loving the music of Vaughan Williams, and tonight's orchestration very much a tribute from Anthony Payne to Vaughan Williams. Well, finally on the bill this evening, we've Tchaikovsky's last completed symphony, his sixth. Despite its somber mood, Tchaikovsky wrote it in unusually good spirits. He was often a composer who suffered from writer's block and from depression, but in the space of just a few months in 1893, he had written a new symphony and it had gone down well with the public. It was his brother's suggestion to name it Pathetique, or Pathetichesky in Russian, meaning passionate and emotional. The name stuck, and so too did the other associations of the title. This is music that is full of pathos, tenderness, and sorrow, as tonight's conductor explained when we caught up with him earlier.
Is there any music written by Tchaikovsky which is not pathetic? As musicians on stage, we need to do a lot of tears. I have asked during the rehearsals, BBC Symphony Orchestra players, actually they are playing extremely well the whole program. I have tried to explain not only like soft or loud, but what kind of picture I am having in my mind. Those international things which are connected to every human being, like if someone has lost a close friend or relative and cannot say maybe anything, just deeply in the sad kind of feelings. That's when the music is doing much better than any words. When you are losing everything and then there is some hope again in life. That's what we try to do when we are practicing, when we are studying, when we are rehearsing a big symphony like Tchaikovsky's Sixth.
It is a big symphony indeed. That was tonight's conductor, Osmo Vanska. And all of Tchaikovsky's symphonies really are miniature, very compressed dramas, conceived in both human and musical terms, which was absolutely their composer's intention. Once he was writing to his favourite pupil, Sergei Taneyev, and Tchaikovsky said, "I should be sorry if symphonies that mean nothing should flow from my pen. Shouldn't a symphony reveal those wordless urges that hide in the heart, asking earnestly for expression?" Well, from the very first notes of this piece, you do know you are listening to certainly some kind of lament for what, it isn't clear. Tchaikovsky never gave any details, and when he was asked about the hidden meaning of this B minor symphony, he simply said, "Let them puzzle their heads over it." But he did admit that during my journey, he said, "I often wept bitterly while composing this piece in my head." Well, the convention at the time this was written, Russia, 1890s, was that if you had a symphony that started in a minor key, you should end in a major key. It would be this triumphal journey of darkness to light and minor to major. Tchaikovsky here only does darkness to darkness. It is a pretty bleak portrait that we get. Starts off in the murky low strings, like some kind of musical primordial soup. You then get low bassoon emerging out of that darkness, and it's all achingly slow but highly atmospheric, this kind of ancient smoky perfume to the music. It's so brilliantly conceived. Well, the conductor Leopold Stokowski said of Tchaikovsky, and I think this is absolutely right, he said His musical utterance comes directly from the heart. It's a spontaneous expression of his innermost feeling. It is as sincere as if it were written with his blood. And here comes Zosmo Venske for the Pathetic.
Osmo Vanska conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra in that prom performance of Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, the Pathétique, at the Royal Albert Hall back in September. And a little later this evening, another return visit to the proms, as we hear Richard Hills, who took to the Royal Albert Hall organ console last August bank holiday weekend for a concert of light music by Coates, Sullivan, Mayall, Quilter and Fats Waller. That's at 11:30 this evening. Before that, at 10 o'clock, our Drama on Three, and this week a tribute to the actor Gerard Murphy, who died in August. Another airing for his performance as Herman Melville in a retelling of the Billy Budd story and how it came to be written. These Buttons We Wear is our drama in a little over 20 minutes. Well, this evening's first prom repeat, the concert we've just heard, began with one Polish composer. And now, before Drama on Three, let's pay tribute to another. The death was announced today of Wojciech Kilar at the age of 81. He was perhaps best known for his film scores, written for directors such as Jane Campion, Francis Ford Coppola and Roman Polanski. But in the early 1980s, Wojciech Kilar wrote his first sacred work for the restoration of the altar at the Jasna Góra Monastery, Poland's leading Marian shrine and home to the image of the Black Madonna of Częstochowa. It's a setting of the Angelus Prayer. Delfina Ambrosiak is the soprano, with Antoni Witt conducting the Polish National Radio Chorus and Symphony Orchestra.
Zdrowaś Maryjo, łaski pełna Pan z Tobą, błogosławionaś
Wojciech Kilar's setting of the Angelus prayer, beginning and ending as it began, with a recitation of the prayer. He made that setting of it in 1984, and on that recording we had the soprano Delfina Ambrosiak and Antoni Witt conducting the Polish Radio and Television Chorus of Kraków and the Polish Radio National Symphony Orchestra of Katowice. And I played you that in tribute to Wojciech Kilar, whose death at the age of 81 was announced earlier today. This is BBC Radio 3. We've organ music from the summer's proms at 11:30, but now at a minute after 10 o'clock, we come to this week's Drama on 3. And this evening, another chance to hear Keith Dewhurst's play based on Herman Melville's novella Billy Budd, which inspired the Britain opera of the same name. These Buttons We Wear is a retelling of the Billy Budd story and an explanation of how it came to be written. Herman Melville is played by the late Gerard Murphy, who sadly died since the first broadcast of the drama in January this year. This was one of his last performances.
These Buttons We Wear, a play about Billy Budd by Keith Dewhurst, based on the novella by Herman Melville.
Here I am in my middle years in New York, in what they call the jazz age, and in a state of high excitement. Because, like a person of another time brought to me from the grave, my grandfather Herman Melville's last book has been published 38 years after he wrote it. The manuscript was held within a neat ribbon and sat on his cleared desk. And when he died, grandmother locked it in the drawer of the desk, and it became a secret, one of so many in our family, and like others, so slow to come to light. Which is why I write to you, dear friend, because you will remember that not until I had a child of my own did my mother let slip that her brother Malcolm killed himself. I knew that her second brother Stanwix had died alone in San Francisco in a hotel that, said my mother, seemed not to have been salubrious. But I did not know that on a night decades before I was born, Malcolm had come home late, locked his door, and blown out his brains. Not until the next afternoon did Grandfather break down the door and... Did nobody hear the shot? I asked. And my mother said, no, Eleanor, because it was an accident. And I did not ask the obvious question because her eyes clouded. And I remembered being 5 years old when grandmother's never seeming to be at peace made me uneaseful in my turn. And grandfather's eyes held the same murky sorrow. Except that when he looked at me, he smiled and said,
Did you get your umbrella?
I don't have an umbrella.
You don't?
You know I don't.
Suppose it rains. What will you do? I know. You'll hide in my hat.
Which he plopped on my head. A low-crowned hat, such as not many wear nowadays. But it still fell over my nose.
Is it dark in there?
He said.
Is it like the depths of a seashell?
Yes, I said.
Can you hear the waves?
Yes. Which is to say, I heard the traffic on East 26th Street.
Can you hear the oars creak as they row Billy Budd to the man of war?
Who's Billy Budd?
He's a handsome sailor,
he said, and took the hat off my head and put it on his own, and with a grin, posed like a handsome sailor, and I said, Billy? You never said him before.
I'm making him up.
Making him up? Why? Did I know then that grandfather was a writer? I don't think I did.
Why are you?
Why are you?
Shh, they can hear us.
But who's Billy Budd?
No scuttlebutt in the house.
Scuttlebutt?
Sailor's gossip. You and me.
Me and him. Do you realize, says my mother, that where his youth and that mutiny in the South Seas were concerned, you were the only one he would talk to?
We take the Madison Avenue streetcar from which we disembark at Central Park, and then what do?
We say all the names.
We do. The names.
Lucy Ann.
That's the name of the whaling ship.
Then the names of the crew. Who are you?
Typee.
Typee.
Typee. That's me. That's my nickname. And the others were?
Long Ghost.
Long Ghost, who was?
Pale.
Spooky Pale.
Pale. And tall, tall, tall.
Like a tower of bones.
A come-down-in-the-world Englishman, Miss Eleanor, with unscrupulous gray eyes. And when did the mutiny begin?
Once upon a night.
Once upon a night. When it was too hot to sleep below, we lay on deck and watched the stars.
Any stars in my crown? When at evening the sun goeth down.
And Long Ghost sang in his voice that was round and racy.
In the mansions of rest, sail to leeward, Typee. One that we don't trust. Will there be any stars in my crown? Ahoy there, Salem. What scuttlebutt?
Bad scuttle, Long Ghost. Bad one. Paper Jack wants to put into Tahiti.
Paper Jack was?
The captain. Captain Venton.
Whom we did not respect.
What's bad about Tahiti, Salem?
Nothing. If you let ashore.
How can we not be?
Ventum's sick.
We know that.
He wants a doctor.
Very reasonable.
They'll have the cutter take him off. Then the rest of us sail on.
They won't take on water or fresh victuals?
They'll have boats come out.
Boats always come out.
We won't get shore leave.
That's their plan?
Sail on.
How do you know this?
Ask the mate.
How do you know?
There's more than me thinks this voyage is a bad one.
Voyages can change.
7 months out of Sydney and only 2 whales taken. Half of us sick and 12 men deserted already.
Say what you mean, Salem.
What I mean is that the voyage won't make enough money to pay us.
We don't know that yet.
We know our rights. We want ashore.
So you can desert yourself.
Just as you did, young Master Typee, when you thought your last ship a bad one.
I must confess, Miss Eleanor, that here I would have made a fool of myself with a riposte such as, I'm a gentleman adventurer, I can do as I please. But Long Ghost put his hand on my arm and said,
Suppose you're right, Salem. And I think that as far as this voyage goes, you may be. But consider.
No, maybe.
Listen. Think. We've signed on and Ventum and the mate are in command. They think they can sail on or not as they please.
Like hell,
if they give the order and you oppose it, what are you? Mutineers.
Then we are mutineers. Yellow bellies there may be, like the steward.
There's a smarter way, Salem.
That damned Sydney Ben and the Dane, but... smarter. How smarter?
Smarter than put yourselves in the wrong.
We're not in the wrong.
You would be if you disobeyed. But state your grievances in a... civil sort of way, and who knows?
Who knows who'd listen, more like.
This is a British ship, registered in New South Wales.